Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Schon wieder Bewerberflaute? Sie schalten Anzeige um Anzeige. Das nervt und ist doch viel zu teuer. Stopp! Raus aus der Recruiting-Spirale. Mit StepStone All Jobs bekommen Sie alle Anzeigen für ein Jahr in einem Paket zu einem fixen Preis. So sparen Sie bis zu 75% Kosten pro Bewerbung und sind jederzeit flexibel. Jetzt Termin vereinbaren auf stepstone.de/alljobs. StepStone. Einfach die richtigen Talente finden für alle Jobs.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window. Open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for itself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
And welcome to the Richard Serrett Show for Wednesday, June the 11th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. I do that for the atheists. All right, ladies and gentlemen, gather around the fire, because tonight I'm tearing into the festering heart of Bill C-2, the so-called Strong Borders Act, a 140-page legislative sleight of hand from our unelected, globe-trotting, Davos-anointed Prime Minister, Mark Carney. This isn't just a bill. It's a manifesto for control, a technocrat's fever dream dressed up as public safety. And at its core, buried in Section 136, is a provision so sinister it could have been ripped from the pages of Orwell. A ban on cash transactions over $10,000. This isn't about borders or fentanyl or organized crime. It's about chaining you, the free Canadian, to a digital leash. It's about Mark Carney, the high priest of global finance, and his lifelong obsession with a cashless, trackable, controllable society. Buckle up, folks, because this is a story of power, betrayal, and a man who spent his career plotting to turn your wallet into a surveillance device. Let's start with Carney himself, a man who's never met a central bank he didn't want to run or a globalist agenda he didn't want to champion. This is the guy who, as governor of the Bank of Canada and later the Bank of England, has been banging the drum for central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, for years. Back in 2019, at a Jackson Hole symposium, Carney stood before the world's financial elite and called for a synthetic hegemonic currency to replace the US dollar, hinting at a digital system that central banks could control. He didn't mince words. He wanted a global financial architecture where transactions are transparent to the state, where every dollar you spend is a data point for bureaucrats to dissect. In 2020, as the world reeled from lockdowns, he doubled down, telling Bloomberg that CBDCs could enhance financial inclusion and improve efficiency. Efficiency, folks, that's the word technocrats use when they mean control. And now, as Prime Minister, his first legislative act is Bill C-2, a Trojan horse that outlaws cash payments over $10,000, whether you're buying a car, donating to a charity. Coincidence? Please. This is Carney's endgame, and it's been years in the making. Section 136 of this bill amends the Proceeds of Crime and Terrorist Financing Act to make it a crime, yes, a crime, to use more than $10,000 in cash for any transaction. It doesn't matter if you're paying for a legal service from a licensed business or slipping a donation to your local church. Cross that threshold or even make a series of smaller payments like $2,000 to a contractor 5 times, and you're a lawbreaker. Not a drug smuggler, not a terrorist, just a Canadian who dared to use the king's currency without leaving a digital trail. The Bank of Canada has been open about exploring CBDCs, and this bill is the foundation. They want a world where cash is dead, where every transaction is tracked, stored, and if they so choose, blocked. Want to buy a firearm? Too bad. The algorithm says no. Need gas for your truck? Sorry, your carbon score is too high. This isn't science fiction. It's the logical endpoint of a cashless society, and Carney's been preaching it since his days at Goldman Sachs. The push for a cashless society isn't new. It's a slow-burning fire that's been stoked for decades. In the 1960s, credit cards started replacing cash, sold to us as convenience, but quietly building a surveillance infrastructure. By the 1990s, electronic payments were normalizing and governments began to see the potential. Every swipe, every tap, a breadcrumb trail of your life. Sweden, the poster child for cashlessness, is already a dystopian case study. By 2018, only 1% of its GDP was transacted in cash. And businesses routinely refuse it. But here's the rub. When cash dies, so does anonymity. Every transaction becomes a data point, cross-referenced with your location, your habits, your politics. And when the state controls the digital currency, they control you. Look at China's digital yuan, already piloted in Shenzhen. It's not just money. It's a tool for social control, tied to their social credit system. Step out of line and your wallet gets shut off. Carney's no stranger to this model. He's praised China's innovative financial systems, while conveniently ignoring their authoritarian baggage. Why is this so dangerous? Because cash is freedom. It's the last bastion of economic privacy in a world where governments and corporations are desperate to know everything about you. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms warned that this bill sets a precedent that could shrink the legal cash limit to $5,000, $1,000, or even less. History backs them up. Look at Rome, debasing its denarius to fund imperial overreach until citizens lost trust in the currency. Or the Weimar Republic in Germany, where hyperinflation turned cash into kindling, paving the way for authoritarianism. When governments control money, they control power. And when they eliminate cash, they eliminate your ability to resist. The Freedom Convoy showed us what happens when dissenters are financially targeted, bank accounts frozen without due process. Now imagine that power amplified by a CBDC where the government doesn't just freeze your account, but decides what you can buy, where you can go, and who you can support. But it gets worse. Bill C-2 isn't just about cash, it's about surveillance on steroids. Midway through its 140 pages are, quote, snooping provisions, as the conservative opposition calls them. And that's being polite. This bill lets any peace officer or public officer, a category so broad it includes the curator of a military museum, demand your personal data from internet companies without a warrant. No judge, no oversight, just reasonable grounds to suspect you might be up to something. Your name, your location, pseudonyms, all handed over because a bureaucrat thinks you're trouble. This isn't limited to border security. It applies to any offense under any act of parliament. Forget to pay a parking ticket? Better hope your ex-posts don't look too rebellious. Michael Geist, a sharp mind at the University of Ottawa, notes that Canadian law enforcement has been chasing these powers for decades, only to be stopped by public pushback and a 2014 Supreme Court ruling affirming your right to online privacy. But Carney doesn't care about your rights. He's a globalist. He's forged in the crucible of the World Economic Forum, where privacy is a quaint obstacle to progress. And here's the kicker. The cash ban doesn't even apply to every group. If you're handling $10,000 to an anti-Israel protest group blockading Canadian streets, Bill C-2 looks the other way, because they're not a registered charity. But try donating that to a veterans organization or a church, you're a criminal. This isn't about fairness. It's about picking winners and losers, about protecting the state's favored causes while punishing the rest. It's the kind of selective enforcement that would make a Roman emperor nod in approval. This bill is a betrayal of Canada's soul, a repudiation of the principles that built this nation. Freedom, privacy, the right to live without a bureaucrat's boot on your neck. It's a page from the playbook of Rousseau's social contract, which promised liberty but delivered control. And Bentham's panopticon, where the watched become their own jailers. Mark Carney, with his polished suits and central banker jargon, is no friend of the common man. He's a technocrat who's spent his life serving the global elite, from Goldman Sachs to the G20. His vision for Canada is a surveillance state where your money, your data, your very thoughts are subject to government approval. So what do? We fight. We call this what it is, a power grab wrapped in the flimsy veneer of public safety. We demand our MPs, our senators, our neighbors wake up to this creeping totalitarianism at our door. History teaches us that freedom isn't lost in a single blow, but in a thousand small cuts. Bill C-2 is one of those cuts, and it's bleeding us dry. If we let Carney and his globalist cronies turn Canada into a cashless, surveilled dystopia, we won't just lose our money or our privacy. We'll lose who we are. Are we free citizens, or are we pawns in a technocratic empire? I know my answer. What's yours?
News not in the news.
All right, let's cut through the fog of Canada's cultural decay with a scalpel. These stories aren't just news, they're a blazing indictment of a nation teetering on the edge of the abyss. From the rejection of woke land theft myths, to the corporate abandonment of Pride's radical circus, to a parent silenced for daring to think for herself, and an immigration system that's less a policy than a surrender to chaos. This is Canada unmasking itself, and I'm going to dive in with the kind of unfiltered truth that makes the elite squirm and the bureaucrats sweat. So buckle up, because this isn't going to be a polite chat. It's a reckoning. So a recent poll by the Association for Canada Studies and Metropolis Institute dropped a truth bomb that's got the woke crowd clutching their pearls. 52% of Canadians don't buy the narrative that they're living on stolen Indigenous land. 52%. Only 27% swallow the guilt trip, with the rest either shrugging or dodging the question. The numbers get juicier when you slice them by age and geography. The young, impressionable 18 to 24 crowd, marinated in years of academic indoctrination, are the most likely to nod along, with 41% buying the stolen land story. Meanwhile, those over 65, who've seen a few more rodeos, rejected by a whopping 65%. Rural Canadians, grounded in reality, dismiss it at 56%, while urbanites, steeped in progressive echo chambers, are more likely to agree at 34%. Calgary stands tall, with 69% giving the narrative a hard pass, while Edmonton, just a few hours up the road, lags at 41%. Homeowners, perhaps with a stronger sense of property and history, reject it at 53%, while renters, often younger and more transient, lean toward the guilt narrative at 42%. Even among Indigenous respondents, only 53% agree, with 36% pushing back. This is a detail the activists won't be shouting from the rooftops. So, this poll is a rebellion against the relentless drumbeat of historical revisionism. The stolen land narrative isn't just a statement, it's a weapon, wielded by elites to shame Canadians into surrendering their national pride. The data shows a clear divide. Those least tethered to reality, youth, urbanites, renters, are more likely to buy into the guilt. Why? Because they've been fed a steady diet of self-loathing by universities, the media, and politicians who profit off division. The older generation, rural folks, and homeowners, people with a skin in the game, they see through this nonsense. They know history isn't a cartoon of good versus evil. Canada wasn't stolen in some grand heist. It was built through complex, often messy interactions between settlers and indigenous peoples, with treaties, trade, and yes, conflict. To reduce it to theft is to spit on the sacrifices of those who tilled the land, built the cities, and forged a nation. Calgary's 69% rejection rate is a beacon of sanity in a world gone mad with apologies. And the fact that even a third of Indigenous respondents reject the narrative? That's a signal the activist's script isn't as universal as they'd like you to think. This poll isn't just about data. It's a middle finger to the woke orthodoxy trying to rewrite Canada's story. Good for the 52% who see it for what it is. Toronto's Pride Parade, once a celebration of human rights of sorts, has morphed into a circus of radical politics and foreign conflicts. And now, the corporate cash is drying up. Five heavyweights, Google, Home Depot, Clorox, Nissan, and Adidas, have pulled their funding, leaving Pride Toronto scrambling. These companies, which shelled out six-figure sums for gold and silver sponsorships, are bailing, and the excuses are as bland as unsweetened oatmeal. Home Depot claims it's just, quote, reviewing nonprofit giving. Clorox mumbles about, quote, other Pride-aligned initiatives. Nissan says it's about, quote, marketing priorities. Sure, and I'm the Queen of England. Pride Toronto's executive director, Kojo Modesti, blames Trump's war on woke. But the real story is closer to home. Last year, Pride Toronto took a hard left, issuing a one-sided condemnation of Israel's self-defense against Hamas, alienating Canada's Jewish community. Then there's the anti-pinkwashing brigade, accusing Israel of faking gay rights to look virtuous, a claim so absurd it's almost performance art. Add to that the 2024 parade's viral moments of public nudity around children, courtesy of groups like the GTA Skinny Dippers. And it's no wonder corporate boardrooms are running for the exits. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Pride used to mean something, I suppose. Freedom, individuality, the right to love who you want. Now it's a soapbox for every radical cause under the sun, from anti-Israel rants to public nudity that makes Sodom and Gomorrah look like a church picnic. The corporate pullout isn't about Trump. It's about self-preservation. These companies aren't stupid. They see the backlash brewing. Parents furious about kids being exposed to adult antics. Jewish Canadians fed up with being scapegoated. And regular folks tired of being lectured by a parade that's lost its way. The left loves to scream, capitalism bad. But when the capitalist cash stops flowing, they're suddenly mute. Pride Toronto's leadership thought they could play revolutionary without consequence. But the market has spoken. And let's talk about the anti-pinkwashing nonsense. The idea that Israel's support for gay rights is a conspiracy to mask its sins is the kind of mental gymnastics that deserves a gold medal in stupidity. Meanwhile, Hamas would throw these activists off a rooftop faster than you can say diversity. The irony is thicker than a Canadian winter. Pride's radical turn isn't liberation. It's a betrayal of its own principles. And the corporate exodus is just the first bill coming due. In Hamilton, Ontario, Catherine Cronus, an elected parent on the Ancaster High School Council, dared to commit the ultimate sin. She politely objected to mandatory land acknowledgments at council meetings. Back on April 9th, she voiced a concern, asked for it to be noted in the minutes, and moved on. No drama, no tantrum, but the Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board wasn't having it. On May 22nd, they paused her role, citing vague allegations of harm with zero evidence. Cronus is now barred from meetings, and the board's latest stunt, scrapping the approval of the April 9 minutes, reeks of a cover-up. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms is fighting back, arguing this is straight-up censorship, violating her charter rights. The board's refusal to provide a virtual link for the public and their discomfort with media presence only deepens the suspicion they're hiding something. Parent councils are supposed to be democratic, but this looks more like a Soviet show trial. So welcome to the brave new world of Canadian education, where a parent's polite dissent is treated like a capital crime. Catherine Cronus didn't burn down the school or scream profanities. She simply said, hey, Maybe forcing everyone to recite land acknowledgments is compelled speech. And for that, she's been exiled. This isn't about harm. It's about control. The school board, like so many institutions, has been hijacked by ideologues who can't tolerate a single voice questioning their sacred rituals. Land acknowledgments aren't just words. They're a loyalty oath to a worldview that brands Canada as inherently illegitimate. Kronos saw through the charade, and they made her pay. The board's refusal to even record her objection in the minutes is Orwellian, erasing dissent to pretend it never happened. And the secrecy? No virtual link, no transparency, just a 30-minute huddle to figure out how to handle a reporter who dared to show up. This is what happens when petty tyrants run school boards. They don't debate, they silence. Catherine Cronus is a hero for standing up, and the Justice Center's fight is a reminder that the charter still means something, even if the bureaucrats forgot. If this doesn't wake parents up to what's happening in their schools, nothing will. Immigration Minister Lena Diab stood in the House of Commons and admitted, with all the conviction of a wet paper towel, that Canada's immigration system is a free-for-all. Up to 500,000 undocumented immigrants, maybe more, are living in Canada, ignoring deportation orders. Her solution? Hope they leave voluntarily. Conservative MP Michelle Rempel-Garner tore into her, pointing out the absurdity of admitting 290,000 new foreign students this year while Canadians can't find doctors or housing. Diab's response was a masterclass in dodging. She said, "We're working on sustainable immigration." Translation, we have no plan. Rempel-Garner didn't let up, noting that last year's housing starts were dwarfed by the influx of newcomers. And over 1 million foreign students from 2023 are unaccounted for. The Canada Border Services Agency, tasked with removals, is apparently too busy to keep up. This isn't policy. It's a surrender. Now here's the dirty little secret of Canada's immigration system. It's not a system. It's a sieve. Lena Diab's performance in the Commons was a pathetic display of bureaucratic hand-wringing. And Michelle Rempel-Garner was right to call it baloney. 500,000 people, maybe more, ignoring deportation orders, and the government's plan is to cross its fingers and hope they book their own flights? This is what happens when you let virtue signaling replace governance. Canada's letting in hundreds of thousands of temporary residents, students, workers, you name it, while hospitals are overflowing and housing is a pipe dream for most. The math doesn't lie. 290,000 new students, less than 290,000 housing starts, and 1 million-plus people waiting for a doctor. Diab's sustainable immigration is a fairy tale for people who believe feelings build houses. And the kicker? The government can't even track who's overstaying their visa. This isn't compassion, it's chaos. Rempel-Garner's right. A system that doesn't enforce its own rules is meaningless. Canada's immigration policy is a house of cards, and the wind is starting to blow. There it is, folks. A Canada unraveling at the seams, where common sense is fighting back against the tide of ideology, cowardice, and incompetence. These stories aren't just headlines, they're battle lines. All right, don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, @RichardSerrett64. That's it for me. I'll talk to you again real soon, God willing. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.
Mit Mastercard Business Bonus sichern Sie sich attraktive Rabatte auf Tools und Services für Ihr Unternehmen. Alle Angebote unter mastercard.com/businessbonus.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.